few weeks now thinking through the book of 2 Corinthians. And so the book of 2 Corinthians, as we've noted before, right, it's sort of this fascinating book where Paul's writing the second letter to the Corinthian church, which has a massive problems. And in the passage Mark was talking about last week, chapter 4 of 2 Corinthians, Paul, you know, he's making a lot of points in there, but one of the big points is, you know, he's been going through a lot, right? I mean, it's not like this easy thing to go be a missionary sort of in the, you know, the first century AD, right? Roaming through the Roman Empire. And he has this marvelous passage. I mean, it's just brilliant rhetorically. In chapter 4, verse 8, "We are afflicted in every way, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not driven to despair. Persecuted, but not forsaken. Struck down, but not destroyed. Always carrying in the body of death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be manifested in our bodies." I mean, this is a marvelous passage, right? I mean, just sort of this idea that Paul's been suffering all this stuff, but, you know, he's trying to tell the Corinthians, right? We're doing all of this because we've got this mission, right? We've got this idea that we want to go out and tell people about Christ. And so then where next, right? And that's where we want to pick up. We'll pick up down in verse 16. "So we do not lose heart," right? So because all these bad things have been happening, he's saying, but we don't lose heart, right? We're not getting despairing about all of this, and why not? And so our passage today picks up at the end of chapter 4 and runs to the beginning of 5. "So we do not lose heart. Though our outer self is wasting away, our inner self is being renewed day by day. For this light momentary affliction is preparing us for an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison, as we look not to the things that are seen, but to the things that are unseen. For the things that are seen are transient, but the things that are unseen are eternal. For we know that if the tent that is our earthly home is destroyed, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. For in this tent we groan, longing to put on our heavenly dwelling, if indeed by putting it on we may not be found naked. For while we are still in this tent we groan, being burdened, not that we would be unclothed, but that we would be further clothed, so that what is mortal may be swallowed up by life. He who has prepared us for this very thing is God, who's given us the Spirit as a guarantee. So we are always of good courage. We know that while we are at home in the body, we are away from the Lord, for we walk by faith, not by sight. Yes, we are of good courage, and we'd rather be away from the body and at home with the Lord. So whether we are at home or away, we make it our aim to please him. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each one may receive what is due for what he has done in the body, whether good or evil." And I have a confession to make, right? I mean, I get to this passage, right? And I, you know, Mark finishes up and sort of I think, okay, so what's next? And I turn and I read this passage, and I am struck with a complete sense of terror. And the terror was this. I don't know, it must have been 3 or 4 years ago. I preached a sermon here, right? All about heaven, right? And, you know, we were talking about heaven, and it was all this, it was a nice sermon all about heaven. But in the course of this sermon, I had mentioned that, like, whenever I'm reading descriptions of heaven, it always sounds boring, right? I mean, honestly, sitting around playing harps all the time sounds boring. I mean, just like, what do I do with this? Like, people are trying to describe heaven, and I know at one level it's really exciting and great, but every passage I read, just sort of like, yeah, if that doesn't sound great. So I preach that sermon, and then immediately after, Marv Kuypers comes up to me and gives me a book to read about how exciting heaven is, right? Because gosh, I need to correct this horrible problem I have about not. So he gives me a whole book about how exciting heaven is, and if that's not enough, Emma Kuypers then comes up and gives me 2 books about how great heaven is, right? So I had to read 3 whole books about how great heaven was, and I've got Marv there, and I've got Emma there, and they're both telling me how great heaven is, and I really need to fix this problem. So I read all those books, and honestly, it didn't help, right? I mean, at the end of all of this reading, right, I'm still stuck in the best I've ever seen was Dante's description. Dante, who takes this grand road trip, he goes through hell, climbs the mount of purgatory, gets to heaven, goes all the way to heaven, gets into the presence of God, and he says, "It was unbelievably amazing, and I can't even describe it because words just completely fail me, so there's no hope I'm going to be able to tell you how amazing this is." And I always liked that because, oh, if it's that, like that, like, I can't even describe how amazing it is. I can live with that description, right? But all the others, so I'm sitting here thinking, great, now I got this passage all about heaven again, and what is going to happen here? And it's going to give me 4 books this time to go read about heaven and how amazing it is. And so then I'm thinking, all right, what I need to do is figure out, well, maybe like I can just sort of sit at this and skip the heaveny parts. And maybe, and then it's like everywhere in this passage. It's just over and over and over again. So then I think, okay, well, maybe I'll just watch Paul develop his argument here. And maybe we'll sort of just trace what Paul is actually saying. And then I ran into this really weird realization. There are three paragraphs here. They all say exactly the same thing. I mean, Paul is literally just repeating himself. And you want a real test of that, rearrange the paragraphs and you lose zero continuity, right? You can read them in reverse order and it reads just the same as reading them in forward order, which again, Paul, sometimes you're just wondering, where did he learn to write? And he just keeps repeating this over and over and over. And so then I'm thinking, why in the world is he repeating this same thing in three successive paragraphs, just saying the same thing over and over and over? I get it, heaven's great, heaven's great. And I'm looking at it, and then I realize why he's saying it over and over and over again. It's because people like me in reading this missed the point. And so he has to say it again, hoping the second time maybe I'll get the point, and the third time maybe I'll get the point. And then it suddenly hit me, this isn't a passage about heaven at all. It actually has nothing to do with heaven. Paul is talking about earth. He's talking about our lives now, our lives right here. And he's writing to the Corinthians saying, let's talk about your life right now. And suddenly you look at the passage and you realize, oh, Paul is actually addressing in this passage a pair of errors. And there's these two errors he's saying people are making in thinking about our current life. And he wants to address both of them. The first error is this. There are lots of people out there that go through life saying, my life is miserable here. I am in awful shape. It's a horrible life. Everything about my life is miserable. Things are terrible. I am depressed. Things are going bad. And it's just this awful, terrible life. And so Paul wants to address that. And he addresses it first by saying, you know what? You're right. Your life is miserable. I mean, he begins it right away. Our outer self is wasting away. Here's a newsflash. You are all getting older. And as you get older, your bodies are decaying and getting more and more decrepit. Every day you live, you are a little bit older and a little bit more decrepit, and you'll just start aging more and more. Your body's wasting away. I mean, I know Chris Peltier will tell me this is heretical, but even Tom Brady's body is degrading and becoming worse day by day by day, right? I mean, we're all just sort of watching ourselves get older and more decrepit, and you just sort of imagine this and you say, wow, life really is kind of miserable. You will never be as young as you used to be, ever. You will never be as vibrant and active as you used to be, ever. You're just decaying. Your brains are decaying. Your body's decaying. I mean, it's just getting worse and worse and worse. And Paul says, that's all true. But you know what? That's just the body part. You've got another part of you, your inner self. That's not decaying. You say, okay, yeah, sure, right? I got this soul, it's not decaying, I got that, right? But you know what? It's not just my body decay that's the problem. I am suffering from affliction. There are all sorts of problems in my life. I mean, I've got all these problems in my life, right? And you look around your life, and you can start listing the problems in your life, and all the things in your life that are going horribly and not well, and all the people that annoy you and oppress you, and all the sort of troubles in your family lives and your friends, and you look around the world, and we're just got all this affliction. And Paul comes along and says, yep, you do have affliction. That's absolutely right. For this light, momentary affliction is preparing us for an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison. And he says, look, you've got that affliction, but you know what? Your affliction is just light affliction. And then you get this idea of what he's trying to say. He says, here's your affliction down here, and here's the weight of glory. Your affliction is light. It's, you know, it's just kind of airy, but the weight of glory, glory up here is amazing. So if you compare the affliction you're feeling with the weight of glory you'll feel later on, the glory is so heavier and more substantial than all that affliction. And you say, yeah, that may be true of other people, but my affliction isn't here and glory up here. My affliction's up here. My life is really bad, right? I've got lots of bad things happening to me. I have a really high level of affliction. So when Paul comes around and talks about your light affliction, sure, whatever, most of you have light affliction, but mine is really serious and substantial. And Paul wants to say, you know what? It's good you have so much affliction. Because the funny thing about all this affliction is, it makes you realize something. If you have no affliction and you're thinking about heaven, and you think heaven's better than my life, well, sure, I don't have much affliction, and so heaven can surely compensate for all this light affliction I have. But what if you have lots of affliction? If you have lots of affliction, we tend to think, okay, here's the way to glory, here's my affliction, I'm up here with all this massive affliction, and yeah, maybe the glory of heaven and the weight of glory is a little bit better than the affliction I'm feeling. Maybe it's a little bit better. And Paul is saying you've completely missed. What you have missed is how much your affliction is. Your affliction is bad, right? You are suffering. You are suffering a lot. But what you fail to grasp is the weight of glory isn't here at all. It's somewhere around Neptune. I mean, you move up 6 inches in all this affliction, and it feels overwhelming now. But the weight of glory is so much bigger than our affliction. It's so much bigger than our affliction, whether it feels light or feels heavy. And if we can get that perspective, Paul says, then we'll realize no matter how bad your life is, imagine if that is light compared to the weight of glory. When we aren't suffering, it's easy to imagine the weight of glory being better than our, bigger than our affliction. But what if we're really suffering? Jesus says this weird remark in the middle of the Beatitudes, "Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted." And that always struck me as weird, right? I mean, it's great that I'm mourning because I'll be comforted. Well, like, honestly, I'd rather just skip the mourning, right? And then I'll need the comfort. But then if you imagine what Jesus is saying here, is that if you're not mourning, you have no sense of what comfort would feel like. But imagine you're mourning. And imagine you're really mourning. And then imagine comfort. That's what comfort looks like. Only those who are suffering can appreciate the weight of glory. Only those who are mourning can appreciate the comfort. And Paul is saying, one of our problems is we think our lives are miserable and how horrible this is, but the reality is we should be looking at it saying, my life is horrible, and what that should make us appreciate is how great the weight of glory is, that no matter what we're going through, the weight of glory makes this feel light and momentary. And then he says, you know, another thing that happens when we're thinking how miserable we are is I think I am miserable and I come to church on a Sunday morning and you know what? You're all happy. You're all smiling. You're all laughing. You're all great. I'm the only one suffering here. And he says, no, wait a minute. We all groan, right? We are all groaning, he says. For while we are still in this tent, we groan being burdened. We are all feeling the burdens of this life. We are all feeling the afflictions of this life. You look around this room, and I guarantee you there are people in this room that are suffering every bit as much as you. And you may not know it. There are the quiet sufferers and there are the louder sufferers, but everyone in this room is feeling these burdens, and the burdens are overwhelming. And the fact that people show up here on a Sunday morning is stunning. When you think about the burdens that we're all living under and feeling all the time, and we look around and if you think, I'm the only one feeling this, you're wrong, Paul is saying. We are all feeling this burden. We are all feeling this suffering. And part of what we do here on a Sunday morning is we gather together as afflicted, burdened people, and we say, we're suffering. We've got this affliction. And then Paul says, and the funny thing about the affliction is it is transient. It's just transient. There's this old story, right? You know, it's actually kind of, you can't trace it back. But the earliest we see of it is back in the 1200s, right? So a Persian mystic, right, wrote this thing about this old fable. So we called it an old fable then. And the fable was this. There was a monarch who went to all of his wise men and says, okay, I got this ring, and I want to get an inscription on the ring of something that is always true at all times, in all ages, no matter what's going on. This statement will always be true. So the mystics all huddle together, and they come back with the statement that is always true. This too shall pass away. Even this will pass away. And Paul says, you know what? You are suffering. But if all you're doing is thinking about your suffering and how much you're suffering, you've forgotten something really important. Even this shall pass away. No matter how bad things are, it will pass away. No matter how awful it seems, even this shall pass away, Paul says. And so he's looking at the people who are feeling all of this misery, and he's saying, do not minimize the fact you're feeling the misery. He is not coming to people who are miserable and saying, why are you miserable? He's saying, no, you are miserable. But that misery is transient and dwarfed by the weight of glory. And he looks at people and he says that. But then he simultaneously wants to address another set of people. There's people in church, and they're sitting there, and they show up, and they say, I'm not miserable. Life is great. I'm really happy here. I'm so happy here. Things are going wonderful. My life is amazing. I mean, how could things be better than what's going on? And I'm going to go through my life being incredibly happy with everything that's going on. And Paul looks at them and says, really? Haven't you noticed how bad things are around you? Haven't you noticed you're getting older and decaying? Haven't you noticed all the affliction you and others are feeling? Haven't you noticed that we are all groaning, burdened by this world? What do you mean you're just happy here, right? There's a lot here not to be happy about. Are you just sort of pretending? And he's looking at him saying, do you really imagine whatever this is your home? I mean, this isn't your home. You're living in a tent. And you're living in a tent, and you're looking at your tent saying, this is a great house. This is just amazing how wonderful this tent is. And the problem we have is, none of us live in tents, right? But you can imagine this. Imagine you're on a trip, right? And you stop at one of those rest stops. And you go into the rest stop, and there's somebody in there who's sitting in the rest stop saying, my life is terrible. This is the worst place ever, right? I mean, the bathrooms are dirty here, right? The food either comes from a vending machine or it's at one of those chains that I've never heard of from before, right? And the only reason it's still in business is they have a monopoly on the food service. I mean, the food is just disgusting. The soundtrack they're playing is Barry Manilow's greatest hits on repeat, right? And I'm listening to Barry Manilow. I'm eating horrible food. I'm using guitar. Life is awful. And if you saw someone in a rest stop going on and on and on about how horrible their life was in this rest stop, what would you say to them? This is a rest stop, right? You're not supposed to move in, right? You're not supposed to live in the rest stop, right? Get in your car and drive down the road a bit, right? But imagine you walk into the rest stop and you meet the person who says, this is the best place ever. When I go on vacation, I go to this rest stop because this rest stop is incredible. I mean, look at the food and it's all provided there and I don't even have to pick what music I'm going to play. Like, this is so, it's got the best fluorescent lighting I've ever seen, right? And imagine you met that person. What would you say to them? Get out of here, right? There's a whole world out there that's better than this rest stop, right? And that's what Paul is saying. He's looking at the Corinthians saying, you are living in a rest stop. That's where you are. And you're dwelling in this rest stop, and you are saying how miserable your life is, or you're saying how wonderful your life is. And both of those are a little wrong. You've completely missed the point here. We shouldn't be thinking of the rest stop as our home. We shouldn't be thinking of the rest stop as the desirable place to be. He says, you're living in a tent. And when you're living in this tent, what do? Well, you do one of two things here. You either live in the tent and you look at your tent and talk about how miserable your tent is. It's leaking and it doesn't keep the cold out and it's just a terrible tent. Or you look at your tent and you say, wow, this is like the best place I could ever imagine living. And you decorate your tent and you sort of try to convince yourself that life in the tent is better than anywhere else. And Paul wants to say, stop thinking of the tent as your home. This is just a transitory, temporary living place. Now, Paul says that, and it strikes us as, oh yeah, that's immediately obvious. Yeah, obviously, I'm living in a tent, and it's not my permanent home, and so on. But then why do I go through my life spending all of my time complaining about or decorating my tent? Like, why don't I just get out of my tent for a bit and go out and see what's outside of this world I'm living in? And Paul says the reason is because we're a little bit afraid. And what we're afraid of about leaving the tent is this. He says, you know, if indeed by putting on we may not be found naked. For while we're still in this tent, we groan being burdened. Not that we'd be unclothed, but that we'd be further clothed. And it captures this idea. You're in your tent, and your tent is what makes you feel protected from the elements. Your tent is what you, this is sort of keeping me safe. And if I were to walk out of the tent into a world without my tent, I'm naked. I'm exposed to the world. I'm suddenly a little bit scared. Like, what will happen out there? And you'll notice both people are scared. If your tent is miserable, you're scared because you think, outside my tent is even scarier. If I stop worrying about my tent and I just walk out of it, oh my goodness, the tent was bad. I mean, it's just terrifying out there. But also, if your tent is comfortable, you're scared to leave. You're scared to walk out of this world you've constructed because this is what's providing me all of my safety. And Paul is saying, no, once you leave the tent, you get even better clothing. And what does leaving the tent look like? Leaving the tent is walking in a way that says, my life is not about all of the things I spend my days thinking about. My life is not about what is seen, it's about what is unseen. My life is not about all the things that will pass away. My life is about the things that won't pass away. And you get out of the rest stop, and you get on that road, and you don't know where it goes. But here's what you're doing. You're driving down the road now, not by sight, but by faith. And that's a scary thing to do. I mean, let's not minimize how scary it is to just say, whatever it is I'm afraid of and all of the miseries I'm feeling, I'm going to let them go because they're light and transitory compared to the weight of glory. And all those things that make me feel comfortable and safe, I'm going to let them go because they're also light and transitory. And what am I going to do instead of living with my fears or my comfort? I'm going to, as Paul says, so we are, whether we are at home or away, we make it our aim to please him. When you get to heaven, the idea is, well, we're there to please God. God will reward us, we'll be there, we'll be standing in the presence of God, and it'll be indescribably amazing. And when we're here on earth, imagine if we thought of living on earth just like that too. Imagine we lived on earth, and instead of worrying all of these things about our lives, what makes us miserable and what makes us comfortable, we spend our time thinking, what would make God happy today? And I can say it to myself all I want. And here's what I know. I'm going to wake up tomorrow morning and be worried about what makes me miserable, what makes me comfortable, because Paul knows I've got this problem. That's why he keeps saying the same thing over and over again, is he's hoping if he just says it six more times that maybe it'll start slowly sinking in. That when I talk about God and I imagine my life, those two things should connect to one another. That talking about God and thinking about my life should mean when I'm living my life, I am not trying to construct a better tent. I am not trying to keep the tent to protect me. I'm trying to say, you know what? I don't know where the road is going. I'm going to walk purely by faith. I'm going to give up on the sight. And you know what? I am going to completely trust that somehow or another, he who has prepared us for this very thing is God, who's given us the Spirit as a guarantee. That's what he's done for us. He dies and he gives us the Holy Spirit to be a guide through life. And we constantly turn our eyes off of that and look right to our tents, and we look to them all the time, and we complain about it, and we look for comfort, rather than saying, you know what? I don't even know what life is like outside this tent, but it's about time I start trying to figure out. Let's pray. God, we thank you that you have given us the Spirit as a guarantee. God, we thank you that through the work of Christ, you've enabled us to live this life and know that the weight of glory out there is so much greater than all the things here. It's greater than the bad things, God, and it's greater than the good things. And God, as we live our life and we feel this affliction, we feel this comfort, God, help us to remember that both of those will pass away in the end. And that, God, really the only joy we can feel, the only true joy, is realizing we're focusing on what is unseen. We're focusing on you and what you would have us do. In Christ's name we pray. Amen. You can take your hymnals and attend to hymn number 543. Please rise and we'll sing together.